Get Loud.
I really don't understand your question. I don't know if I can't hear or you guys can't talk in the mic or whatever.
Get Crazy.
You go find them, you throw your arms around them, you give them a big kiss on the mouth if you're a girl.
Get Nuts.
Get up, baby. Get up. Oh, yeah, it's gone.
It's The Cube Show.
It's that all-born radio.
I'm a good person.
Man, y'all take it easy down there on the off, baby.
God want us to win the World Championship.
You're doing it wrong. You're doing the wrong things.
Is anybody else tired or is it just me?
Hey, legitimate question, though.
Okay.
I'm drunk right now.
Wow.
Another one!
I!
And now, Cole Kublick.
He is bad Auburn man.
Welcome back in, Cube Show, Sports Radio 730 and 103.9 The Ump. I want to go right into our next guest, Congressman Mo Brooks. You can find him on Twitter if you want to follow him there, at Rep Mo Brooks. Congressman, good morning. How are you doing today?
Oh, pretty good. A little bit down. The bipartisanship that we had here in Washington, D.C. ended with the first pitch last night when the Democrats just started abusing us.
Oh, so it didn't turn out too well for you guys on the diamond last night.
No, they beat us 11-2.
Ouch.
Their pitcher, who's a former college pitcher, and he's still in his 40s, so he's still got pretty good stuff. Cedric Richmond out of New Orleans, he was game on. His curveball was pretty much unhittable by our squad.
Congressman, let's do this first before we get into just the past week of what's happened with you and your experience. Help our listeners understand what this baseball game is, how it started, and what it means to you guys every year.
Well, it's a congressional baseball game. It started around 1908, 1909. It's Republicans versus Democrats. This year we played in the Washington Nationals Baseball Stadium, so it's a major league facility. We had about 25,000 people come to the game last night. It benefits charity. Some of it is for disadvantaged youth for sports. Some of it's for reading initiatives. Some of it's for boys' clubs and girls' clubs. Going into the game, as of 2 or 3 days ago, we'd raised about $600,000 for those charitable institutions. I think with the surge in people participating and coming to the game, we might have gotten close to a million, certainly more than 700,000 or 800,000, and we'll have to see what the tally is. But it's a new record for the charity benefits that come from the playing of the ball game.
Wow, it's impressive. Congressman Mo Brooks joining us now on the phones. I can imagine the first thing that comes to my mind, Mo, is injuries and guys sort of coming up lame. Is there a lot of hamstrings and knee tweaks and ankle rolls for you guys out there every
you
year?
You got it. Yeah, you're spot on. The first time I played was about 3 years ago, and it's bases loaded, 2 outs. First inning, the Democrats have been on a streak ever since they got Cedric Richmond as their pitcher, and there's a soft line drive down the right field line, and I'm playing right field, and I sprint just as hard as I can to get over there. I make a really good catch. At the moment I make that really good catch, I pull my left hamstring. So all those hours of practicing at 5:30, 6 o'clock, 6:30 in the morning, I'm out after a half inning.
I think if I was out there, that would probably be me. I'd be down with some sort of injury very early on. Congressman Mo Brooks joining us on the phone, at Rep Mo Brooks, if you want to follow him on Twitter. Let's go back a few days ago when you and your teammates were practicing for the congressional baseball game across the Potomac River, and a gunman, lone gunman, arrives at the practice facility and opens fire on you guys. Describe for us where you were and initially what happened when the gunfire began to rain down on you and your teammates and some of their families, by the way.
Well, to give you an idea of the setting, if you have seen the football movie, Remember the Titans, that's a high school team in Alexandria, our baseball practice field is their home field. And we get there. I leave my condo at 5:30 in the morning. I ride my bike down across the Potomac River, past Reagan National Airport, and eventually to the practice field. It's about a 9-mile bike ride. And I rode my bike on Wednesday. The ball field has a chain link fence that goes up 10 or 15 feet. It's pretty high. It's not your normal 4-footer or 6-footer. It's much, much higher than that. It totally encircles the ball field. There's only one gate that you can get in and out of, and that's just past the first base dugout on the right field side. There's a second gate on the third base side and third base dugout, but fortunately that gate was locked. So we start our practice at 6:30. Normal routine is to do fielding, so I'm playing. I was in the outfield, practicing in left field, and the coaches will hit us line drives and pop flies and things of that nature, and we hit the cutoff man as best as we are able. At the same time, there's infield practice, so that's the routine. Then the next thing, around 7 o'clock, 6:50, something like that, is we'll start batting practice, and there'll be a typical batting cage placed around home plate where the netting catches the foul balls, and the ones that you hit in play, well, of course, they're going to shoot out anywhere from the right field line to the left field line. So that's the setting. I should add that we have cinder block dugouts that are recessed downwards about 1.5 feet, maybe 2 feet.
I'm hoping we didn't lose Mo right there.
But I've always played. In high school at Grissom, I was a very good outfielder. I had 0 errors over 2 years and was all-city primarily because of my fielding capability, definitely not because of my hitting capability. And so I play outfield. Normally I play left field during the batting practice just so I get more balls hit to me that I can go after. For some reason, I know not why, I decided to go in to hit earlier than I normally do. And so I go in towards home plate. I'm on deck now. Congressman Rodney Davis of Illinois is inside the cage. I'm on the third base side of the batting cage. So I'm probably about 10 to 15 feet from home plate to third base. The rest of the congressmen and senators are over on the first base side. So I'm swinging away, and all of a sudden behind me I hear this loud bam. And I first thought it was a car discharge, and I turn around to look, and I see a gun barrel that is poking right up next to or through the chain link fence just past the third base dugout. Again, it's cinder block. So it was obscuring my vision a little bit of the person from whence that gun barrel, whoever's holding that gun. And somehow or another, I'm not sure if I moved around a little bit to get a better view or if he came closer to the fence, but I got a pretty good look of a man with a gun. He was holding it waist high, which is a good thing. He wasn't aiming with it so much as he was just letting loose a lot of bullets. We had Trent Kelly doing infield at third base. We had Gary Palmer of Alabama, Birmingham. He was doing infield at shortstop. Steve Scalise was at second. Now the gunman missed, but he had a free shot at Trent Kelly and Gary Palmer at third base and shortstop before anyone figured out what was going on, but he did miss them. They reacted fairly quickly. And somehow or another, he either continued to miss them or they were not his target. Because in that first volley of four. The right hip. When I heard a lot of things are happening in that first 4 or 5 or 6 shots, okay? You had the first shot that's a warning. You have people looking over there. Then you hear a whole bunch of shouting to the effect of active shooter, 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 active shooter. And you're hearing the blam, blam, blam of the rifle. And you're hearing Steve Scalise holler something to the effect of, like, I'm hit. or a scream of pain. I don't remember exactly what it was. I heard the voice. I knew it was his voice. But things were happening so fast, and there was such bedlam that I don't remember exactly what he said. At this same time, I'm looking at the shooter, and it occurs to me that I'm now the closest person to him because Trent Kelly and Gary Palmer started running towards second base and eventually to right field and somewhere in the neighborhood of the first base dugout or perhaps out that gate on the first base side. And if he turns towards home plate about 30 degrees to his right, that's where the heaviest concentration of congressmen and senators are because we're getting ready for batting practice. And in that instant, it occurred to me that I'm now his closest target. And if he does look, I'm a sitting duck. So I immediately drop my bat. I run around the batting cage, and I dive behind the batting cage. Now, that's not going to protect you from a bullet, but it does have a plastic barrier at the bottom that is not see-through. So he might not know I'm there and might not can aim. And so I'm there with two or three other people lying face down, and the rifle persists, and there is no return fire at this point from any of our Capitol Police. So he's still shooting in the direction of second base, shortstop, right field. And it occurs to me that if this shooter walks around the third base dugout towards home plate, there I am laying on the ground. I'd be 10 to 15 feet away from him. Still, the screen fence would be between us. But we'd be sitting ducks. No defense, no place to go. If we get up, he'd be able to shoot us in the back, an easy target. And I make the decision that I'm going to have to go someplace because you're evaluating odds, and you're doing so very rapidly. And I made the decision that the odds are he's going to come around that third base dugout. Those odds are greater than him hitting me if I run. So I took a chance, and I sprinted towards the first base dugout, as did the other guys. And we jumped in face first, like you're diving. Some of us got scraped up. Some of us didn't. Some of us got bruised up. Some of us didn't. So this time you've got a fairly sizable huddle of bodies on the ground. We're prone inside that dugout. Now, I know where the exit gate is, and so I go all the way to the end of the dugout, scrambling over bodies to get to that end in case there's an opportunity where I can scramble out through that gate and perhaps safety, because right now we're all sitting ducks. I mean, we're inside a chain link fence, and if he gets to that gate before we do, there is no way we can escape unless we're going to try to climb a 10 or 15 foot chain link fence, at which point we'd be easy targets too. So I'm over there, and about, I don't know how long it was, and again, you hear the bullets, you hear, of course, the firing of the rifle, and one of our more youthful guys, who was a congressional staffer, he was in center field. Bearing in mind, I'd normally be in left field right now, where it would have been an easy target, and I'm slower than this youthful staffer who's in center field. He runs all the way back to the right field track, right before the fence, and lies on the ground. And from what he related to me, his name is Zach Barth. The gunman was focused on him, and the bullets were hitting the ground around him, hitting the gravel, splattering around. One bullet went through his leg. He decides that's not a place to be because the shooter is narrowing in on him. He runs towards the dugout, and he jumps over me and lands a past Jeff Flake, Senator Jeff Flake, who was on the home base side of me, and he's positioned between us. And I look at him, and I say, "You've been shot." And he says, "Oh, no, I'm okay. I'm okay." And I said, "Dude, you've been shot. That's not okay." And, of course, his calf muscle is bleeding, the calf where the bullet has gone through. I didn't know the time it had gone all the way through, but in retrospect, it did go all the way through his leg. And so I took off my belt. I handed it to Jeff Flake and or him. I don't remember exactly what happened, and told him he needed to use it as a tourniquet. Jeff Flake may have helped put it on his knee. I don't know. You know, there's bedlam. There's a lot of screaming going on, and we're trying to keep low so that we're not an open target to the shooter. And we don't have much maneuvering room. In the background, there are two other people that have cell phones, and they're screaming into the cell phones about how we need reinforcements. We're under attack. We're under attack. Congressman down. Ambulance. Get medical help. You know, all the things that you shout into the phone under the circumstances. Then we've heard no return fire as of this point. I haven't from our Capitol Police. And so the tourniquet is put on Zach Barth's leg, and then I quit looking at Zach, and I turned back towards the right field side of the dugout, and I'm right at the bottom of the steps, and I see this 10-year-old boy who's the son of Congressman Joe Barton, who's one of our coaches, and he's standing at the top of the steps, and I guess he's in shock, or he's not fully comprehending, or he doesn't want to hurt the guys who are lying on the ground down at the bottom of the dugout by stepping on them. I don't know what it was, but he wasn't getting in the dugout. He was frozen. And so I scream at him to get in the dugout now and get down. And that kind of unfroze him. There might have been other people shouting at him, too. I don't remember. And all that bedlam. He comes in the dugout. He does get down. So he's now low. And some of the other congressmen shield him with their bodies in case there are any stray bullets. And now I roll back over, and I'm face down, thinking that, well, it's probably better to be face down. If a ricochet hits, it's better to hit the backside rather than the front. And then some period of time passes, and then I start hearing, bam, 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 right next to me. And I go, oh, my goodness, a second shooter. And all this is instantaneous. And I turn to look. And the thought that went into my mind was a good guy. It was a Capitol Police officer, and he was using the edge of the dugout as a protection as he was shooting his pistol across the baseball diamond from the first base side to the third base side. I don't think he hit the shooter, but he certainly distracted him and kept him occupied, so perhaps some of our congressmen and senators and staffers could more safely get away. At the same time, he's telling us, ordering us to stay down. You know, don't make for the gate. Stay where you are. So we stay, and it seemed, you know, time is different under these circumstances. I thought the whole thing lasted maybe 3 to 5 minutes, but there's a videotape that shows a part of it, and that ends at about 5 minutes and 48 seconds. We don't have an official count yet, but it appears at least 75 to 50 rounds of bullets were fired by our side and the other side. So we're lying, I'm lying face down. You still hear in the background the people with the cell phones screaming in the cell phones. Then at some point, it seemed like forever, I still don't hear sirens yet, okay? So local police have not appeared, or if they have, they came in without their sirens on. At some point, I hear, shooter down, shooter down. At that point, Senator Jeff Flake runs out of the dugout towards Steve Scalise. I mean, we knew he was down. I saw him shot in the early volleys. He was playing second base position. Jeff Flake runs out. Two other folks, I think, they either come through the gate or they come out of the dugout. I'm probably the fourth person that runs out to Steve Scalise. The first two there talk to Steve. He's asking for liquids. I think it was Gatorade. Of course, that's what happens when you're losing blood is you get thirsty. I was at his hip level. He was on the ground, prone towards, his body was facing center field, and I was on the center field side of him, where I could see the wound in his hip. Brad Winstrup, an MD from Cincinnati, who's also a congressman, was on his buttock side, trying to tend to the wound, and someone gave Brad some scissors, and Brad handed me a cloth, put pressure on the open wound, and it was about a dime to a nickel size. So this wasn't a .22 this guy was using. It was a pretty good sized bullet. And I applied pressure while Brad started cutting through the pants to to get a better view of the wound. And then one of the more memorable moments is that same Capitol Police officer, David Bailey is his name, who was standing above me with the pistol blazing away about 5 feet above my head. He's been wounded. He comes out on the ball field to check on Steve because that was his duty. His duty was to protect the third in line chain of command in the House of Representatives. And we're hollering him to go get tended to himself because he's bleeding. But this just gives you an idea of the dedication that our law enforcement officers have to their jobs and how they're willing to risk their lives. When we rushed out, we thought the shooter was down. We did not know if he was incapacitated, if he had the ability still to shoot. So that exhibited a lot of bravery, particularly on the part of Jeff Flake, who was the first one out of the dugout. We did not know if there was a second shooter. We had not heard any shots for 4 or 5 seconds. But you never know under those circumstances. So I think Jeff Flake, a senator from Arizona, jumping out of there first, that was remarkable courage. I don't know where everybody else went. Everybody was kind of scattered. There were still people in the dugout. The kids that were in the dugout, I'm sure they were, there was an effort to calm them down and talk to them. But I was not paying attention to that. I was on the field with Steve Scalise. So that's it, pretty much A to Z, unless you wanted to cover what transpired after. Oh, I will add that when the Alexander Police got there, and they got there about the time that I was first reaching Steve Scalise, the sirens were now closed. You had fire department. You had medics rush up. When the medics came, I left Steve. And I went to my backpack near my bicycle where my cell phone was, and I immediately texted out a message to my family, 4 kids, wife, 3 kids-in-law, that we'd been under attack at the Republican baseball practice. A rifle had been used. Over 50 shots had been fired. At least 3 people had been hit, but I was okay. And the reason I do that, and I've done it before, is that I wanted to minimize the anxiety they would have if they heard it from a third party. And normally it hits the news media or it travels real fast. And I did not want them to have the emotional reaction or shock of suddenly finding out that their husband or dad had been in a shootout with bullets flying all over the place and them not knowing if I was okay or dead.
It's really an amazing account, Congressman Brooks, and we really do appreciate you sharing it with us. Do you have an update on the health of Representative Steve Scalise? I know he was last I saw still listed in critical condition, but is there any update on his health?
He is still in very bad condition. There is some improvement. I think here's the gist of what happened to Steve. The bullet went through into his left hip on the side. It rattled around inside there, tearing up a lot of muscle tissue. Apparently also doing damage to the bone structures. I'm not sure if it's the actual joint or the hip bone or whatever, what have you. There are also vital organs in the hip area that are pretty compressed together, urinary tract related, intestinal related. If it goes high enough, you might actually start getting to the kidneys or the liver. And apparently the bullet also did damage to some of his organs, and what you've got then is he's taken a lot of blood transfusions. He's got significant internal bleeding, and the progress that is being made is each time they can remove more of the bullet fragments or each time they can find something that is bleeding and they can stop the bleeding, then that's a good thing and it's better. But he's still got a lot of recovery to go. He's getting excellent medical care. Hopefully, he'll make a full recovery. But if so, it's going to be a long time before he's able to be active as he was before as a second baseman on our congressional baseball team.
Well, we wish him well, and same to you and your cohorts there in Washington. We really do appreciate the time today, Congressman Brooks. It was a very firsthand account, very detailed. It's scary to think about, and it's we're sorry that you had to go through it, but we appreciate you sharing your experience with us today.
Thank you, and quite frankly, these kinds of conversations are very therapeutic for all of us. It gets our mind on something. It may not sound different, but to be able to express it is most helpful. And I hope the audience found it worth listening to.
I absolutely think that they did, Congressman Brooks. We really appreciate the time. Look forward to catching up with you again soon.
Thank you, sir.
Take care.
Congressman Mo Brooks, at Rep. Mo Brooks. You can follow him on Twitter. Just a fascinating story to think about. When he says that he turns to see the gunman holding it at his hip, waist level, and opening fire, and then another time after people begin to disperse, and he looks back at the gunman and realizes he's in closest proximity to him than anyone else, I can't imagine what goes through your mind right there.
Seriously scary stuff. All you're trying to do is just get ready for this, basically this charity baseball game. And you have something just so chaotic just rip into your life like that. Just a very harrowing account. And from all accounts, and in his own too, as far as helping with the other congressman with his calf, a hero. Help save a man.
Absolutely. We'll get to a break. We'll clean up some tweets and continue other conversations next on Cube Show. Back in Cube Show, Sports Radio 730, 103.9 The Ump. Really do appreciate Congressman Mo Brooks joining the show. Just some scary details, really, of that story.
Yeah.
So Dave Adams tweeting into the show. We didn't get to 10 after tweets, so we'll clean up a few of those. Best hashtag Cube Show guest ever. Thank you at Rep. Mo Brooks for your bravery and time to tell your story. One other part, too, he says that he still hasn't heard sirens approach the facility, yet they begin to scream, shoot her down, shoot her down, shoot her down.
Right.
So you think about how confusing mentally that would have to be of, okay, we heard return fire. We're hearing people say the shooter's down, but you haven't heard any emergency vehicles approach yet? That would be, that'd be tough to come out of that dugout. At that point in time.
Absolutely. Would be a giant, giant cluster going on in my brain. And just to be able to think clearly enough in a situation like that where there's gunfire raining, it's a situation I hope none of us ever have to be in. But very thankful that someone like Representative Mo Brooks was able to be as clear-headed and as thoughtful and as brave as he was.
And you also think about another congressman's 10-year-old son sitting in that dugout with them.
Yeah, that's... You just think you're waking up early, go do some practice before you go into the office, get ready for this game coming up in a couple of days, bring my kid along. It's just baseball in the early morning. What's the big deal? And then you have something like this. I mean, it could have been really, really, really tragic.
It's crazy to think about just how dangerous it was. Chris Crow tweets in. This is going back to a few segments before. Head coaches who whine about penalties when they get caught cheating are jokes, in my opinion. Seems pathetic to me. I mean, you cheated. Come on. Also tweeting in, Dave Adams says, I was told the name on the front of the jersey is more important than the name on the back. Play for team, not self. And Drink Local Beham tweeted, the only thing vacated wins does hurts the all-time record of the coach. And that only matters if you're a top-notch coach. So
yeah, depends on what wins are vacated. Like, if you're talking Final Four wins or wins leading up to the Final Four and having to remove a banner, that's a big deal.
Well, another thing that
conference championships, national championship.
And the other thing mentioned, too, about possibly having to return that money mm-hmm. that you received from being involved in postseason play.
Well, that's
that
the
can
bigger
hurt
one.
Your program.
That's you now having to write a check.
This quote I like, Blake Hopkins tweets into the show, if Rick didn't know, it's because Rick didn't want to know. He has stated multiple times over the years that he knows everything going on in his program. Funny how now he wants to play the victim. Colonel Dan tweets in, he did not know about prostitutes, but you can bet he knew about parties. Yeah, that's along the lines of what we kind of discussed, is that it very well could be strategic on his part as to, I understand that there's some things happening to help get these recruits on board, And that's why this guy's in place, to handle those things. I stay away from that. Very easily could have been turning a blind eye to it. I can see where Pat Forty's coming from the standpoint of he didn't know exactly what was going on. But I also believe that it's his responsibility. And you have to take that upon yourself once you do get caught for it, and once it does come publicly that it happened. It's on you, even if you didn't know about it. That's the one part of these coaches that I seemingly can't understand, is why you can't step up in front of people and say, I didn't know that was happening, but you know what? It's wrong for me to not know, and I'll make sure that that doesn't happen again. I take the responsibility. Can you imagine what the public perception would be of Rick Pitino or Hugh Freeze right now if that would have been how they handled these situations from the jump?
Would have been cleaner. Would have been a lot cleaner. Wouldn't be nearly as much. Now, with Rick Pitino, it's a little different because Rick Pitino's had some issues in his past. Hugh Freeze, you know, you could have basically said, hey, I didn't know anything was going on. But I found out about this, and we found out about this. We're shutting that stuff down right now. Just, I understand how you can possibly not know everything that's going on. Part of this 35-page document says that Rick Pitino and the coaches would not have contact with the prospects from like 10 o'clock at night until the next morning. I understand not trying to contact your prospect at 1:30 in the morning and be like, how was it?
Things good?
Did you have fun? You still up? You up? You up? Dot, dot, dot. No, none of that. I understand that.
I saw a Call of Duty username and thought it might have been you. Get to sleep.
Somebody is either got to tell Coach Pitino about this, or Coach Pitino just willingly does not know that something like this is happening. And I'm starting to lean toward the thought we were starting to roll up to earlier in the show last hour after we were talking with Pat Forty, is that he may not have known prostitutes were there, and they were technically having prostitutes paid to solicit these. I guess it wouldn't be soliciting if they're already paid. To seduce these young men. Young is 16 years old, man.
Very.
It's very, 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 very young. He may not have known that was precisely what was happening, but he knew that he had a guy that could get the job done. And whatever he may, and I believe that Rick Pitino would have signed off on a guy like Andre McGee and said, do what you got to do, man.
Yep. And then
just leave me out of it.
And I don't have to be the guy. I can sort of take a step back here. And
I'll see you guys tomorrow when we do some more meetings, when we discuss some things with the prospects tomorrow.
Going back a little bit further, Dan Strickland tweets, heard an interview with Rick Ankiel yesterday. He sounded just like at Cole Kublik. Not British Cole, but analyst Cole.
Not British Cole?
British/Australian Cole. Okay. Down under Cole.
Rick Ankiel was on Tom Abraham yesterday. So.
Bama B. Rich tweets at Cube Show, elude the rugby style tackle. She missed our discussion on.
Okay, so
was it eluding percentage? What was it?
Elusive rating.
Elusive rating. God, Josh, it's so stupid when you hear it again.
Josh Jacobs is the nation's highest returning running back in terms of elusive rating.
And that is legally described as when it boils down to.
When it boiling down a runner's success beyond what is expected by his blockers. Pretty close to that.
Chris Crow tweets, unless it's the Rubik's Cubic, who cares? And
are you going to put the elusive rating this year in the Rubik's Cubic?
You know what?
That's coming up.
It's going to be tough not to put it in.
I know it's always.
How do you not include downs, something so specific?
Turnovers.
Like
and,
elusive rating.
And now elusive rating.
Wow. Will tweets in at H2O Will, Pitino ripped Saban for the 9/11 reference post ULM loss, then Pitino running prostitutes for recruits. Hashtag classy.
Well, listen, I've always said that the righteous have nothing to fear. So I don't mind criticizing people because my skeletons in my closet aren't prostitutes coming over filleting people for money. So I'm cool. I'm cool.
All right, well,
why criticize? Let me ask you this real quick about the elusive rating in Pro Football Focus. You talked about they were from Britain and they're doing this from like over, you know, over next to Big Ben, not your quarterback, the other Big Ben, the clock. Do you subscribe to the theory? Because I don't want to be the whole like get out of our yard, this is our sport, blah, blah, blah.
Get out of my yard, Bouchard. Birmingham Bulls.
But if you legitimately, like, are focused on another sport, like, shouldn't you be at least based in the United States?
Yes.
Because we go to London, like, twice a year, three times a year. Don't give me your elusive rating by watching. Now, let's say if Herb Hand went over to London and started doing this, and, you know, Tosh Lapoy went over, like, if they two started Pro Football Focus in London, I'd say, okay, there's some background. But if you just got these, you know, these couple of Brits over there just like, this is the elusive rating of Joshua Jacobs. After I have a spot of tea.
pass the crumpets. He looks elusive. Also, Chunked at PullHook76 tweets in, wait till you see his forward aft lateral velocity rating.
Oh, snap. I haven't seen that yet.
Yeah, write that down. It's out of 300, not 200.
Oh, it's even higher.
All right, we'll be back with the TV listings. Get you set for the weekend next. Welcome back in, Cube Show, Sports Radio 730 and 103.9 The Yump. Appreciate you guys tuning in. Friday, always a little bit odd when it comes to TV listings. But I did look up something for you a little bit earlier in the show. You were saying that you were going to quit saying emoticon and start using emoji.
Yeah, say that.
An emoticon is a pictorial representation of a facial expression using punctuation marks, numbers, and letters, usually written to express a feeling.
Like hyphen,
But also the facial expression pictures, like the frowny face, whatever, also said to be emoticons. Now, emoji, a little bit different.
Is not basically not the faces, right?
That's a small digital image or icon used to express an idea, emotion, etc. I think emoji is both. Emoticon is just the facial expression.
Maybe you're being super specific when you say emoticon. Yeah. I'm going emoji because it makes me feel smarter.
Good. Let's get to our TV listings for tonight. I feel like that's all we do is educate people here on the show. Emoji,
facts,
emoticon,
opinions,
facts and opinions, Rubik's Cubic.
Elusive rating. Josh Jacobs, that's
it. We got to make up some just dumb stat.
Why didn't we put Josh Jacobs on the poll we had a couple days ago?
Because we didn't have his elusive rating then.
That's on us! Maybe if we start doing our homework.
MacGyver tonight, CBS, 8 p.m., 7 p.m., Hawaii 5-0, 8 p.m. Anybody watching that stuff? Anybody?
No. Got to be enough, right? Enough people? Not enough. You're right, not enough.
No. Jurassic Park tonight on AMC. Oh. That movie has stood the test of time.
Pretty good. And they've sort of remastered it, so it doesn't look as dated. Still some moments in there where...
Juice tonight on BET. It's a good movie. 7 p.m. Darnell Jefferson plays the lead role in that movie.
It's not about the former Illinois quarterback?
No, it's not. It is not. Home Alone tonight on 6:30 p.m.
Ooh, I get to guess the channel. Home Alone, very timely movie. Probably on...
Not everyone thinks it's a Christmas movie like you do.
I'm going to say Pop.
CMT. What says country music television more... Then Home Alone. Macaulay Culkin at Christmas time with Yankee Intruders.
Yankee Intruders. That's right. Bernie Williams and
Aaron Judge kicking down the door. It's Joe Pesci. He's not. If that guy's not a Yankee, who is?
Fair enough, I guess.
Derek Jeter. FX, just for you tonight, Arkishay, 7 p.m., Paul Blart Mall Cop 2.
The sequel?
The second one.
Oh, man, because it picks up where the first one left off. There's so many questions after the first one.
Yeah. Right.
Does he get a new segue? I will. Well, that's why you tune into the movie.
Gotta watch it. Gotta watch it. All right, let's get to a break. Before we do, I want to tell you about our friends at Dreamland Barbecue. Father's Day is Sunday!
Oh, yeah, Mr.
Don't
Kublik.
Waste your time with a tie or a shirt or pajamas or a rake.
No.
Get him something he's really going to enjoy. Dreamland Barbecue. Go to dreamlandbbq.com. You can ship it if your dad's not local. What better way to say thank you, Dad, for all you do than ribs, white bread, sauce, sweet tea, banana pudding? Take him out to eat right there on University Drive near Jordan Lane, or just go pick some up and enjoy it with the family. Like all fathers out there, Dreamland Barbecue. Ain't nothing like them nowhere. Go to dreamlandbbq.com, at dreamlandbbq via Instagram and Twitter.
Oh, Instagram as well.
Yep.
All right. Social media worldwide.
It'd be Dreamland in it. And we're going next week, right? Should we invite
Tuesday.
Listeners to come with us, or is that a private event?
It's not private. We'll tell you guys we'll tell you guys Monday and Tuesday where to find us. It'll be on Tuesday.
Not private. U.S. Open today. Watch the Fescue. It will be the big winner.
Norman Fescue from Yugoslavia.
And I didn't even get to Michael Phelps and how he's going to race a shark for Shark Week. Now, unfortunately, it's not going to be chasing him, because that...
I'd watch.
I'd pay $129.99 for that.